You remember the Trojan War, don't you? Helen of Troy, the trick of the Trojan horse. Well, that was a long time ago, if it really happened. It was probably during the 11th or 12th centuries B.C. Greek poet Homer glorified and amplified it considerably in his epic The Iliad around 850 B.C., and he was recording a tale that had a long oral tradition behind it, populated with gods and mortals and all kinds of add-ons to whatever the original story might have been. His recounting of the 10-year siege of Troy is nearly 16,000 lines long, so it would probably take more than a day to read the whole thing aloud. That's not going to happen at Ensemble Theater Cincinnati later this week, but the story will be told. It's called An Iliad, and it's another version of the story. It's one that's been adapted by an award-winning playwright, Lisa Peterson, and a veteran actor, Dennis O'Hare. This stage version has a lot of characters, but they're all being played by one actor. That's Bruce Cromer. He's here in the studio with me tonight with the show's director, Michael Haney. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Great to be here, Rick.
So, Bruce, how many characters are you actually playing in this? Do you know? Have you counted them
up?
It's
funny. Usually on the posters and everything, they always build it up. But no, I'd say it's manageable. It's maybe 12 or less.
Well, how do you do that? How do you distinguish between them? Or how do you help the audience distinguish between
them?
Well,
Michael's, again, helping me tremendously in terms of simplifying. But it'll be a change of silhouette and a change of vocal placement and rhythms and things like that. A lot of it comes down to, though, it's a good story. It generally only has two-person scenes. So that simplifies things. Mm-hmm. I think the only scene where I've got three people is between Hector, his wife Andromache, and the baby Astyanax. So it's just a matter of making sure that I have the folds of cloth that represent the baby in the right arm at the
right
time.
Baby's not talking yet. So.
No, right.
I wanted you to add some goo-goos in there.
Don't give me the opportunity.
You've done at least one other one-man show that I'm aware of, and it was at ETC. It was I Am My Own Wife. Does this show present different challenges than
Well,
that?
The interesting thing is I did do I Am My Wife. I did it at the Human Race.
Oh.
My first ETC show was a one-person show with Michael at the helm. It was called Underneath the Lintel.
Ah, yes.
But as it turns out, I've also done in school, I did a one-man show based on Holden Caulfield. I did Ovid's The Metamorphoses. This is when I was a young acting professor and wanting to get scholarship. So this, I think, is my fourth or so. But in Underneath the Lintel was just one character. This, again, changing back and forth like I Am My Own Wife, it does present that difficulty of you try to stay away from the standard, I stand on this side of the stage when I'm this person, I'm on this side of the stage when I'm this person. Those stereotypes, I'll say, and Michael's great at that too, trying to shake it up. We've got an audience now that's very used to film clips. So they're used to having one person showing in frame, and then they switch to the other. And I think we're playing a little bit more like that. It's just a simple turn rather than really doing a drastic switch, but it's great material.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Bruce's characterizations are so clear that he doesn't have to do much. We follow the story.
And when the two of you work together on this, do you talk to him about how you envision him shaping those characters, or do you watch him do it and then help him refine what he is doing?
I would say the latter is pretty much the way it goes. It depends on the actor you're working with. Bruce is a very inventive actor. I find when I work with Bruce, most of the time what I'm doing is either shaping, trimming, or refining it to make it simpler. He brings so much to the table that it makes my job very, very easy. I'm not having to say, well, maybe you ought to do it mm-hmm. this way. But sometimes I'll force him into a different direction than his initial instinct. But that doesn't happen very often.
But Michael's really good, too. And this is the advantage of working with a director over and over again. One, if you're going to do something like this, you want to have somebody behind the helm that you really trust and that trusts you. And Michael keeps me from being cute. He keeps me from doing humor that's inappropriate to the show. And sometimes, too, especially we had a nice run through yesterday, and he gives me the images that I can actually sort of see in my mind's eye when I'm doing parts of the script that just haven't been fleshed out yet. Because the other difficulty with a one-person show is you've got so much to do, it's hard to give everything that's appropriate attention, and you need a trusted third eye.
Some of the script is even in Greek, I understand.
Yes, yes. It starts off with the first line of the Iliad, said in the original Greek.
Oh, do it for us.
Menina aidetha apeleia dio achilleos ulo menen himuria kai ois alga ethica so las diptimu sucasa e di proiapsin hero on.
I've never heard it said better.
Really, so.
I presume you don't speak Greek.
No, I don't. And I'd only know what I'm saying by reading the translation.
So that has to be, it's one thing to memorize lines that make sense. I suppose once you've read the translation, at least you have a better sense of what you're saying.
But it is amazing. You go on YouTube, you know, actors now, the prime thing for research oftentimes is we get on the internet, and you can hear Greek scholars saying that same line in so many different ways. And I'm trying to make it conversational. Yeah. That's a difficulty.
This is also based using a translation by Robert Fagles. And from what I've read in the script, it's quite a wonderful translation. And there's lots of those lines are literally picked up in the script itself.
Yes. But I describe the show to friends by saying it's an Iliad for the 21st century, because the conceit they've set up is that this poet has been telling the story through the ages, and he's sort of compelled or forced to tell it whenever there's a war going on. So he's very seldom out of work. And in telling the story to this American audience, this Cincinnati audience, he's got to find a way to connect with them. And there's a beautiful part early on in the play where he's talking about the list of ships that came to Troy and all these Greek names and where they came from, these little islands and these parts of the country. And he realizes this doesn't mean anything to this audience. So he says, well, what if it's every small town in America? What if it's every small town in Ohio? And he starts listing these cities off or these small towns. And it's very, very moving because all of a sudden it's not Troy, it's Vietnam, it's Iraq, it's Afghanistan.
D-Day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All those boys getting off those ships.
At its most basic, it seems to me from reading the script, it is also a play about storytelling.
Yes.
And that central character that Bruce is playing is called Poet. And it's interesting because it's part of a long oral tradition. I mean, that's Homer took what was already being a story told and do that. And I have to imagine that you're keeping that in mind as you're doing this. The script certainly invites that.
It, to me, it's the most primitive form of theater. It's what all of theater grew out of, which is one person telling a story to a bunch of other human beings. And, you know, maybe it started out at the fire talking about the hunt or whatever, but it's developed, and I think the Greeks were pretty amazing in the fact that they codified what the theater is. You know, I always tell young people, read Aristotle's Poetics, and if you want to break rules, understand what the rules are, and then you can do anything you want.
I liked hearing what you were saying about the play being sort of broadened, made relevant to an audience here, but it's also the play takes on relevance to humanity,
yes.
That it could be anywhere. And I wonder if both of you have had thoughts about how this tale and these characters or why they still resonate with people after 3,000 years. I mean, what is it about the story that is told in the Iliad that people still connect with?
Fagel's translation, the nice thing about it is similar to Ovid's Metamorphoses. There are sections that are so gory that they could come directly out of a video game and go into excruciatingly painful, bloody detail of what it means to pick up a piece of steel and try to slam it through another human body and the consequences of it. But also what's central to this story is Achilles' rage and battle rage in general, where for whatever reasons one man can destroy another, decimate them, and how it has its effect on civilization and on that man after he's left the battlefield.
And it's eye to eye. It's hand to hand. But I think also on a bigger scale, Achilles is the professional soldier, and they're invading, basically. They've got cause because Helen's been captured, but they're invading and attacking this town. And Hector is the family man who is the citizen soldier, and he's protecting his homeland. And so that's the confrontation. And that's down through history. That's been basically what war is about. And so you're seeing it from both points of view. And they're both admirable, and they both have flaws. But to see the two of them and ultimately come to a huge fight to see who's going to be the champion is pretty compelling.
Well, I hope all of you listening feel compelled by all of that. Ensemble Theater's production of An Iliad opens on Wednesday and runs through November 2nd. For more information about the theater and the show, you can check the link at WVXU.org. My guests for this conversation have been actor Bruce Cromer and director Michael Haney. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much, Rick.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.